Welcome to the live reading of the Telegram and Gazette for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Once again, it's Tuesday, April 23rd, and for the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Mass Commission for the Blind, and Unibank for their ongoing support. This is Harry reading with Simon, coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And we begin, as usual, with our obituaries. First one, Kathleen Kleiza, Millbury, Oxford. Kathleen A. Kleiza, formerly Kathleen A. Melanson, age 77, a longtime resident of Oxford, Mass., died peacefully at home in Bethlehem, New Hampshire, on Saturday, April 20th, with her family by her side. She leaves her husband and high school sweetheart of 56 years, Charles Kleiza, a son, Jared Kleiza, and his wife, Lisa of Oxford, a daughter, Shelley Garcia, and her husband, Charles, of Bristol, Rhode Island, a sister, Carol. She enjoyed her five grandchildren, Church and Grant Garcia, Cassie, Cody, and Alexis Kleiza, and great-grandson, Jackson Kleiza. Kathleen graduated from Brahms Beauty Academy and worked as a hairstylist for several years before taking the job as bookkeeper for her husband's business, Best Business Equipment Incorporated of Worcester. She enjoyed traveling, hiking the White Mountains, skiing, reading, shopping, and playing golf. She was the only woman at the Bethlehem Country Club to get her photo on the wall for a hole-in-one. Kathleen was a loving wife and mother and a good friend. She will be missed. Family and friends are invited to remember Kathleen's life by gathering for a time of visitation on Thursday, April 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. in Mulhane Home for Funerals on Main Street in Millbury. Memorial contributions can be made to St. Jude's Foundation, www.stjude.org. Once again, that was Kathleen Kleiza, formerly Kathleen A. Melanson. And the only other obituary for today, Hans J. Schmidt Sr. from North Grafton. Hans J. Schmidt Sr., born on May 13, 1935 in Berlin, Germany, passed away April 20, 2024 at the age of 88 with his loving family by his side. Hans was born in Berlin, Germany, and came to this country on October 25, 1953, at the age of 18. He arrived in Boston through an immigration sponsorship. In 1954, Hans joined the Army's 3rd Armored Division until his honorable discharge in 1963 as a specialist second class. While in the military, Hans worked as a senior welder for his battalion's maintenance platoon. While in the service, he received a letter of appreciation from the president of the International Men's Soccer Club for his participation in the German-American soccer match for the International Club Trophy. He was also awarded the Good Conduct Medal for exemplary behavior, efficiency, and fidelity. In 1958, Hans met his wife, Lucy Dorita Schmidt, of 63 years. They were married at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Worcester on June 4, 1960. Together, they raised 4 children, son Angelo, predeceased, spouse Susan, daughter Erica Kramer. Hans was also predeceased by his brother, Klaus Schmidt. Hans had a lifelong career as a sheet metal engineer and was a dedicated employee at Arduini and Consolidated Manufacturers. In his younger days, he enjoyed bowling and was on a bowling team in Auburn, Mass. For many years. He also enjoyed gardening, crossword puzzles, and could fix anything that was broken. Hans enjoyed spending many years of his retirement in Florida. Returning approximately 10 years ago, he said his family was his legacy. He wrote a memoir of his life and experiences. He had 10 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. He loved spending time with them during family functions. He sat back and enjoyed every moment. Hans was a quiet and gentle man, but when he spoke, you listened. He was a wonderful husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. He is now reunited with his son and brother. With unconditional love, Dad, your family. Once again, that was Hans J. Schmidt, Sr. Well, that wraps up the obituaries for Tuesday, April 23rd. We will take a quick break and be back with Simon, who's going to do the articles from the front page. Stay tuned.
The following is a public service announcement from the Worcester, Massachusetts Association for the Blind Support Group. Though vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester, the group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center. The group provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that's Marion at 508-754-0672.
Good afternoon. This is Simon reading you the front page of today's Telegram and Gazette. That would be Tuesday, April the 23rd. There are 4 major headlines on the front page. The top headline is Prosecutors Lay Out Trump Case. This is from Aisha Bagchi, Bart Janssen, Kinsey Cowley, and Marina Pitofsky. And it's from USA Today. New York. After 4 days of jury selection, former President Donald Trump's New York hush money trial kicked off for a real Monday with opening statements. The case centers on allegations that Trump falsified business records to cover up a hush money payment from his former lawyer Michael Cohen to porn star Stormy Daniels. According to the prosecutors, Trump authorized the payment in order to keep Daniels from hurting his 2016 presidential campaign by going public with her story that the pair had sex. Trump denies Daniels' claim and has pleaded not guilty. The trial is not being televised as per New York court rules, and Merchan, the judge, asks the media not to report identifying details of jurors. He has not sequestered the jury. Merchan gave jurors extensive instructions on the trial and their role within it. He told them not to be influenced by stereotypes or implicit biases. He said they are not permitted to speak with others about the case because only they are authorized to decide. And when the statements began, quote, "This case is about a criminal conspiracy and cover-up," said prosecutor Matthew Colangelo. "Trump orchestrated a criminal scheme to interfere with his 2016 presidential election and covered it up by lying in his New York business records over and over and over again," end quote. He described to jurors a meeting between Trump, Cohen, and a tabloid publisher, David Pecker. The men agreed to a 3-pronged conspiracy to interfere with the 2016 presidential election, Colangelo said. Next front page headline, new designs unveiled for arms, armor, and galleries. This is from Richard Duckett of Worcester Telegram and Gazette and USA Today Network. Worcester. The Worcester Art Museum has unveiled updated design plans for its keenly awaited new arms and armor galleries, which it says are under construction and will be open in late 2025. The galleries represented the Higgins. The galleries presented the Higgins Armory collection will span approximately 5,000 square feet and make a substantial amount of the entire collection accessible to the public through new installations and an innovative open storage system. The museum said the approximately $6 million project is the culmination of a multi-year initiative to present and preserve the important collection in its home city of Worcester. Acquired when the world-famous Higgins Armory Museum at 100 Barber Avenue closed in 2013, after 82 years, the Higgins Armory collection at the museum is the second largest of its kind in the Americas, comprising arms and armor and metalwork from around the world and from antiquity to the 19th century. The collection is particularly known for its rare grouping of suits of plate armor from the 15th to the 17th century Europe. According to an announcement, more than 1,000 objects from medieval and Renaissance Europe, alongside pieces from ancient Greece, Egypt, Japan, India, and beyond, will showcase the global and historic breadth of the collection. The new galleries will not only feature the Higgins collection, but also the museum's arms and armor collection more broadly. However, the Higgins collection is the core of the museum's arms and armor collection. The new galleries will also integrate non-arms artworks that will enhance the narratives and the connections across cultures and periods. Next front page headline, Worcester restaurateur won't get his sentence cut. This is from Brad Petrushin of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette and USA Today Network. Worcester, Kevin Perry Jr., the man sentenced to 14 years imprisoned in 2018 for laundering a large fentanyl pill operation throughout two city restaurants, asked a federal judge Monday to reduce his prison sentence by nearly 4 years. Instead, U.S. District Court Judge Margaret R. Guzman, who took over as Worcester's sitting federal judge in August, indicated she might have given him more time in prison than her predecessor. "He has left a trail of victims," Guzman said, ruling from the bench Monday, following arguments from Perry's lawyer and the government. "He may well have had a far greater number of months if I was the sentencing judge." Guzman's ruling quickly shot down a bid from Perry to capitalize on new federal guidelines that would have reduced his sentence recommendation, though not necessarily the sentence he received at the time it was imposed. Perry was sentenced to 14 years in federal prison in 2018 after pleading guilty to a slew of charges connected to allegations he used money he made selling fentanyl pills disguised as oxycodone to buy 9 city properties, including 2 restaurants. The crimes took place while Perry was out on supervised release following an 8-year federal prison term for making and selling ecstasy pills. The case led to charges against Perry's wife and former restaurant employees after prosecutors said hundreds of thousands from Perry's drug operation had been stashed in multiple places, including a Northborough storage locker and a Worcester church. In court Monday, Perry's lawyer argued that recent retroactive changes in the way sentencing guidelines are calculated would have reduced Perry's suggested sentence by 17 months. The lawyer, Mark W. Shear, asked Guzman to not only shave that off his sentence, but to knock 47 months from his prison term. That would result in Perry being eligible for release shortly. Shear wrote in court papers that Perry, who said he has behaved well in prison, is currently on track to be released in March 2028. Shear said Perry has taken 40 classes behind bars and is taking seriously his obligation to attempt to recover from deep-seated trauma from his childhood. Shear told Guzman that Perry, at age 6, saw his uncle rape a close minor relative. He said Perry told his parents and acted as a witness, securing a criminal conviction for the uncle and causing lasting mental scars. Perry ended up in the care of the state, Shear said, and spent time in various treatment facilities for mental health struggles, including for thoughts of self-harm. Scheer argued that Perry's personal trauma, combined with his good conduct in prison and the sentencing guideline revisions, supported his request. He said Perry had turned over a significant amount of, quote, property through his plea agreement and tried to help the government find hundreds of thousands in drug proceeds that went missing following his arrest. Assistant U.S. Attorney Greg A. Friedholm strongly encouraged Guzman to reject Perry's request. Friedholm said the property Scheer referred to as 14,000 fentanyl pills he was prepared to distribute in the community during the throes of the opioid crisis. Friedholm, who in 2018 said Perry had flunked a lie detector test regarding his assets, said Monday that while Perry had turned over the location of his money, much of it, quote, went out the back door to his wife and to his father-in-law. Quote, he was the one who told his wife where that money was, Friedholm said, right around the time he was allegedly dealing with the government in, quote, in good faith. Friedholm said the government in 2018 plea negotiations agreed not to pursue a charge that could have landed Perry in jail for a mandatory 20 years. The reality, Friedholm said, is that Perry sold fentanyl pills to the public while on court supervision for selling drugs, making him the poster child for imposing mandatory minimums on recidivist drug offenders. He argued the changes to the sentencing guidelines, which are not binding on judges when handing down sentences, were not meant to help inmates with a demonstrated history of recidivism like Perry. And next front page headline, well, that is all of the front page headlines. We'll move on. Oh, no, there's another one. Spruce up at Spencer. That's Earth Day 2024, spruce up at Spencer. This is from Alan Young of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette and USA Today Network. Spencer, at an Earth Day event on a farm in Spencer Monday, clients and staff from the Centre of Hope Foundation in Southbridge helped with the cleanup. The farm's bordering woods and wetlands were used as a dump for residents in the 1950s and 60s, and every year there is a new crop of trash, mostly glass bottles and rusty cans, to collect. Clients at the Centre of Hope spent 2 days a week at the farm as part of a work program, but helped with a special cleanup day Monday for Earth Day, along with students in the Environmental Sciences Vocation Program at David Perry High School. And that is the last front page headline. So we'll move on to Harry with the local news and business after a short break.
Are you a Worcester Regional Transit Authority paratransit rider from Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westborough, or West Boylston? Did you know that you no longer have to call customer service to book your trips? You can now take advantage of our new online reservation system and book your trips online at any time. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to set up your online account to begin scheduling your trips. Please note the online reservation system is an additional option for your convenience. You can still call customer service to book your trips.
And welcome back. Now for the local news for Tuesday, April 23rd, Telegram and Gazette. There are, let's see, one, two, three, there's four headlines. The first one, local men face watch scam charges. Brother's partner allegedly sold counterfeit goods. The next headline, Lakeside Apartments residents relocating. overhaul to raise all 202 units in total rebuild. Then there's pictures from the Worcester Senior Center. And the last one, headline, expert offers tips to fight expected bad tick season. Let's begin with the pictures from the Worcester Senior Center, leaping into spring. Angel Dance Company member Ella Liu, age 12, of Lexington, takes her turn performing at the Worcester Senior Center during Friday's Chinese Spring Festival, a multi-generational celebration of Chinese culture. And members of the Burlington-based Angel Dance Company wait for their chance to perform at the Worcester Senior Center during Friday's Chinese Spring Festival, a multi-generational celebration of Chinese culture. On to the next story. Expert offers tips to fight expected bad tick season by Veer Mundabi of the Worcester TNG. Every year, Sam Telford is asked the same question. How bad will this year's tick season be? Telford, a professor of infectious diseases and global health at Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University, gives the same answer. It's never going to be a good tick season, so take the same precautions as always. People just need to take the precautions as part of their normal behavior, said Telford. Get into the habit of reaching for the repellent spray every time we go outdoors. This applies not only to hikers and dog walkers, but gardeners and landscapers, anyone who may be digging around in backyard bushes. Tick protection. How to protect yourself. When some of us were kids, we remember not having bicycle helmets, but now you're almost committing child abuse by not making your kid wear a helmet, Telford commented. While a helmet won't help, these three things can. Tick repellent, number one. Number two, permethrin-treated clothing such as socks, shirts, and pants. And three, wearing long sleeves and long pants, Telford hopes these become just as ubiquitous during tick season as helmets did for bike riding. What ticks to look for in New England? New England has two primary tick species, the black-legged or deer tick and the dog tick. Both are most active in the spring and summer. The deer tick is smaller but carries Lyme disease. Do ticks jump? Unlike fleas, ticks do not jump and latch on to host through direct contact. Good news for dog owners. Lyme disease cannot be transmitted from human to human or dog to human, according to the Mass Audubon Society. Do ticks die in the winter? Did the warm winter impact tick season? This isn't to say ticks are just a seasonal issue. They've been around all winter, said Telford. If you don't need to wear gloves when walking outside, then you're going to be around. Then they're going to be around. A mild or severe winter will not serve as an accurate barometer of tick activity either, he said. Many assume a mild winter means more ticks, while a severe one means fewer. But Telford has seen the opposite hold true for both. Mosquito forecast 2024. Expect tremendous year. While ticks may not be as predictable, there is another tiny bloodsucker that Telford forecasts will be out in force this spring. This year will be tremendous for mosquitoes, he said. As it warms up, with all the standing water, there will be a huge emergence in May. Luckily, all the same repellents that work on ticks will take care of those flying counterparts, from sprays to properly treated clothing. Despite this, he said that this should not stop anyone from enjoying the great outdoors. People should not be afraid of going into the woods, he said. You don't need to cover yourself in repellent. Just use as directed by the label and go and enjoy the natural world and sunshine. Our next story in the local section, Lakeside apartment residents relocating. the overhaul to raise all 202 units in a total rebuild, by Marco Catalano of the TNG. The Worcester Housing Authority is working with residents of Lakeside Apartments who will relocate during the planned redevelopment of the public housing complex. A major overhaul is in the works, with plans to raise all 202 units and rebuild with new units added, for a total of around 350 units. The project will include a mix of affordable apartments and condos, carried out over four phases, and is expected to take anywhere from 5 to 10 years, with funding coming from multiple local, state, and federal sources. The project team is waiting to learn whether it will receive state funding this year for the two phases. While the timeline of work depends on securing the funding, a vendor hired by the development team is working with residents to ensure their needs are met during a temporary relocation. No work would begin until all residents affected by the first two phases are relocated. Alex Corrales, CEO of the Worcester Housing Authority, said Friday that the team behind the redevelopment project applied for state funding for the first two phases of the four-step project. "We're very eager for a decision from the state. We certainly have our fingers crossed that they select this project so we can begin the work," Corrales said. "At this stage of the game, we're kind of on standby in terms of waiting on a decision from the state." Tremont Development Partners, LLC, formerly Boston Capital Development, and its partner, E3 Development, LLC, are conducting the multi-phase redevelopment. According to a March news release, the development team applied for state funding February 15th for the first phases of the project. The Housing Authority said in March that all necessary local and state approvals were secured for the first phase, which would create 116 apartment units in two buildings. The March news release states demolition for the first phase is planned for the first quarter of 2025, with construction finishing by the summer of 2026, assuming funding is secured, with resident relocation possibly starting in June. Construction of 28 condo units in multiple buildings for marketing to first-time homebuyers would begin concurrently with the first phase. They will develop additional units in the later two phases. If state funding is approved, Corrales said the next step is working with residents on relocation. He said the first two phases of the project would not begin until all affected residents are relocated, a process that could take several months with the city's short supply of available, affordable housing. "We don't have 50 to 60 apartments that are empty to be able to just move everybody at once," Corrales said. "We literally have to wait until a family moves out on their own or an apartment becomes vacant." The Housing Authority has held meetings at Lakeside Apartments to inform residents about the process and is collecting information on the what needs residents would have for any unit they are relocated to. "We've already met with the residents that are part of Phase 1, Phase 2, to collect the information that is necessary to do those assessments, so we are able to work with them in a much faster pace to put them in their temporary relocation unit," Corrales said. Tremont Development Partners and E3 Development have a contract with Housing Opportunities Unlimited, a Boston-based relocation vendor. Housing Opportunities Unlimited employees are working with Lakeside residents to collect information such as whether they need wheelchair accessibility at a temporary unit or need assistance with packing. The Housing Authority and developers will absorb the cost for the transfer of utilities, cable, and internet. Ideally, residents would be moved to another unit at Lakeside Apartments that is not subject to the first two phases to avoid disruption to their neighborhood connections or proximity to local schools. The Housing Authority could also look at other apartments available through the city. The project is part of the Resident Assistance Demonstration Program that allows the Housing Authority to leverage future guaranteed rents and subsidies in order to secure loans needed for the project. And another story in the local section. Local men face watch scam charges. Brother's partner allegedly sold counterfeit goods, by Norman Miller of the TNG. Hartford, Connecticut. A now former Framingham State University police officer is due back in federal court Tuesday on allegations he took part in a scheme to sell counterfeit luxury watches, authorities said. Clavis Naco, age 23, of Worcester, along with his brother, Dennis Naco, 24, and Izzadine Kimka, age 24, of Waterbury, Connecticut, are each facing federal charges in U.S. District Court in Hartford after a multi-year investigation. According to a federal affidavit, the three men allegedly ran several websites, Instagram pages, and Facebook groups where they advertised and sold counterfeit watches they had imported from China. Federal authorities purchased several of the watches from various Instagram pages for $200 to $300 each, according to the affidavit. All right, I'm going to take a quick break and come back with more business news. So stay tuned. Don't go away.
Hello, Audio Journal listeners. This is Bill Ruggiero with an exciting show coming to Audio Journal called Talking Topics. It is going to be broadcast on the second Sunday of every month at 6 p.m., so just tune in to Audio Journal. See you on Talking Topics. Bye.
Okay, I'm back. Now for some business stories. Company says writing undetectable as artificial intelligence. Uses multiple learning models to create content. By Karina Vanek of USA Today. Scottsdale, Arizona. An artificial intelligence writing company that bills its writing as undetectable as AI plans to hire about 100 people over the next few years after establishing a headquarters in Scottsdale, Arizona. About 10 employees of the company, Content at Scale, are starting in the Scottsdale office with an additional 10 to join in the next few months, said Julie McCoy, the company's president. The company plans to gradually grow over the next few years to reach a headcount of about 120. Available jobs will include roles as developers and engineers, ideally with some experience in artificial intelligence, McCoy says. Graduates with degrees in areas like computer science and programming could also be qualified, she said. Content at Scale allows clients to buy written articles created by artificial intelligence to use on their websites for search engine optimization and growing their reach. The company's posts are designed to boost clients' ranks in search engines like Google, in order to boost internet traffic to their websites. The writing is undetectable as AI, she said, because the software uses multiple large language models, which are the learning models used in AI that contain vast amounts of data. By stacking multiple models, the topics and writing can be more diverse and feel less robotic, she said. The software offers real-time search engine optimization analysis to create web posts that will boost the visibility of the client's site. The technology inside our stack is always changing, McCoy said, with the goal of outsmarting Google's AI detector and other AI detection tools. The next story in the business section, GM's new products could be pioneering. New V2H accessory lets customers power homes. By Jamie LaRue of USA Today. Detroit, General Motors. Through its GM Energy Business Unit, starting selling products on Thursday to let people power their homes using their GM electric vehicles. GM said these new products could mitigate weather-related power outages and integrate with future clean energy products to boost personal grid resiliency. The products are being sold in bundles and accessible through current GM mobile brand apps, allowing customers to manage the transfer of stored energy between applicable and connected GM energy products. We believe our EVs will afford customers ways to use that excess energy from their EV to power their home, said Asim Kapoor, Chief Revenue Officer for GM Energy. And the last story in the business section. Platform aims to fill skilled blue-collar jobs. Labor up to launch as need rises for more U.S. manufacturing workers. By Daniel DeSau of USA Today. Knoxville, Tennessee. The main feedback Simbajanga has gotten from early users of the hiring platform Labor Up, a startup he co-founded with a student at his alma mater, the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, is, why didn't this company exist before? Labor Up is designed to connect skilled technicians, electricians, and machinists to high-paying manufacturing jobs. Think of it as a LinkedIn for people who don't spend hours curating online profiles, but still need an online presence to get the best jobs. Janga, who graduated from the university in 2022 and then studied artificial intelligence at Stanford, teamed up with former classmate Logan O'Neill, a senior computer science major, to build AI into Labor Up. It's really about simplifying what it means to be online, Janga said. These are not people that stare at a screen from 9 to 5. These are people that work with machines, so the only time they have to sit down to actually write a resume is usually on a weekend or after work. In February, there were nearly 13 million employees in the U.S. manufacturing sector and 562,000 job openings, according to the Bureau of Labor Stats. The average salary for manufacturing jobs is around $70,000, and some machinist positions reach an average pay of $95,000 when combined with benefits. All right, I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back with Simon, who will lead us in sports and living. Stay tuned.
Are you aware of the important services provided by Elder Services of Worcester Area, a.k.a. ESWA?
ESWA provides home health services, home-delivered meals, home-delivered prepackaged medications, laundry and meal prep, and transportation to medical appointments.
For more information, contact ESWA by calling 508-756-1545. Once again, that's 508-756-1545. ESWA wants to help you have a happy and healthy new year.
Good afternoon again. It's coming up to 12:40. We're reading sports headlines from today's April the 23rd, TNG. Top headline, long-time track friends set for Springfield. This is from, it doesn't say. Anyway, Quabbin Regional Seniors, Natalia Marchand and Seth Twarog who have been friends and classmates since their early elementary school days, will continue together as student athletes and teammates at Springfield College in the fall. Both from Hubbardston and team captains, Marchand and Zwarog have proved themselves as indoor and outdoor track stars for the Panthers. The duo, who will focus on sprint events in Springfield, made their decisions after they were invited to attend the President's Reception for Academic Excellence in late February, an event which celebrated accepted students with high academic achievements. Marchand and Twarog are members of Quabbin's National Honor Society. Next, sports headline. NBA teams prepare to face Clark. This is from Jordan Mendoza of USA Today. The Caitlin Clark hype keeps getting bigger, and even her future opponents are cashing in. The NCAA's all-time leading scorer is a few weeks from making her WNBA debut, and opposing teams are already making adjustments to get ready for one of the biggest attractions in all sports. Some teams are moving games home, games against Clark's Indiana Fever team, to bigger arenas or generating even more hype with promotions to get more fans in seats for must-see games against the basketball star. Clark, whom the Fever selected with the number one overall pick in the 2024 draft, is on the verge of signing a new eight-figure with Nike and is expected to get her own signature shoe, one of a selected few WNBA players with one. Without a doubt, the Caitlin Clark effect is already changing professional women's basketball. Here are how some WNBA teams are preparing for the league's newest star. Washington Mystics moved game versus Fever to Capital One Arena. The Washington Mystics on Thursday's game moved the Thursday's game against... On Thursday became the latest team to adjust plans for Clark, moving their game against the Indiana Fever to June the 7th. And Capital One Arena, due to, quote, unprecedented demand, an announcement applauded by Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. Moving the game will allow thousands more fans to watch Clark's debut in the nation's capital. The Mystics' home court is the Entertainment and Sports Arena, which has a capacity of 1,200. The capacity of Capital One Arena, home of the Washington Wizards, is 20,000. The move to Capital One Arena will allow for additional fans in the stands, as well as premium hospitality options, including suites and the all-new, all-inclusive courtside Hennessy Lofts, the team announced. Las Vegas Aces move game versus Fever to T-Mobile Arena. The reigning champs versus the rookie will be in a bigger arena too. The two-time defending champion Las Vegas Aces also changed the venue for their July 2 game against the Fever. The matchup will be played at the Mobile Arena, which seats 20,000 people. The Aces' home venue, the Michelob Ultra Arena, has a capacity of 12,000. Sparks Sky Arena issues versus Caitlin Clark. Two teams still playing in smaller arenas against the Fever are resulting in sky-high prices to get in. And the next front page, sports headline is from the Sunday's local roundup. Pitching keys sweep for Greyhounds. This is from the Worcester Telegram Gazette. And the first part is from the local college's baseball. Assumption 3, Southern California State 0. Assumption 4, Southern Connection State 2. And Anna Maria 11, New England College 0, Holy Cross 12, Lafayette 9, WPI 4, Babson 3, Babson 19, WPI 4. In softball, Anna Marie 12, LaSalle 9, Anna Marie 9, LaSalle 7, Assumption 6, Franklin Pierce 3, Assumption 2, Franklin Pierce 0, Colgate 1, Holy Cross 0, Endicott 7, Nichols 0, Endicott 4, Nichols 1. High schools, baseball, Frontier 2, Nickmuck 0. And we'll go from sports to living with Harry. Oh no, with me. I'll just hold on a second while I find the living section. There it is. First headline, update your old tech devices without spending a lot. What do you do for that? It is from Kim Commando, our favorite, from Special to USA Today. Are you reading this on a two-year-old iPhone SE3? Go ahead and make those over-the-hill jokes. It's almost hitting the average smartphone lifespan of 21 and a half years. Upgrading your laptop to or smartphone is inevitable. But wait before you throw out that chunky computer. Even when a piece of tech starts showing its age, you can still give it a new lease in life. Number one tip, buy more storage. Most modern phones don't have memory card slots. Instead, expand your cloud storage to offload photos, videos, and other files to free up space. Saving to the cloud means you get secure backups too. You should use the option built to work with your phone. For my Android, using Friends, Google One upgrades start at $2 for 100 gigabytes of space. If you're on an iPhone, iCloud Plus pricing starts at $1 for 50 gigabytes. Second tip, play your favorite tunes. Old speakers, that is. Want to get Spotify or Apple Music streaming around your home? You don't have to invest in a complete Sonos set of pricey wireless speakers if you are still rocking the old wired kind. Add a Bluetooth adapter, like the Esyncin model, and those old speakers can play the classics or the latest hits beamed right from your phone or computer. One Amazon reviewer said, the thing was plug and play on a 56-year-old family console. It's the best of both worlds. Modern tech with classical design and sound. Now I can listen to vinyl, AM/FM stereo, or my own playlist in style. Next tip, get Wi-Fi from anywhere. Tired of walking around with your laptop to find the best Wi-Fi signal? Blast Wi-Fi dead zones with the Wi-Fi extender. Boost your router's wireless signal with options like the TP-Link RE305. It's certainly cheaper than buying a whole new router or a mesh system. And if you're having connectivity issues, it's a good place to start. Increase your TV's IQ. You can bring any TV into the streaming age as long as it has an HDMI port. Try a Google Chromecast with Google TV, the Amazon Fire TV Stick, or the Apple TV 4K to make your old box smart and streaming ready. Next tip, maximize your workstation. Your laptop might not be speedy, but upgrading your workstation has real benefits. Here are a few updates that won't break the bank. Number one, a comfortable keyboard can speed up your typing. A larger monitor is easier on your eyes and gives you more screen space. An ergonomic laptop stand eases serious strains on your neck. Next tip, give your PC a boost. Feeling ambitious? Upgrade your computer by upgrading your RAM. Tons of guides online will help you with this one. Just don't blame me if you take on a techie project you're not ready for. Oh, okay. Computers that freeze up and are generally slow moving can benefit from this upgrade, the memory upgrade, but you'll need to open them up. Inside your computer, you'll find slots for RAM sticks, the memory that gives your computer room to think. Swap out the current RAM sticks for new ones that are faster and offer more capacity for a significant performance boost. Next tip, give game systems an extra life. This one's for the gamers. You can buy extra storage for both PlayStation and Xbox consoles that plugs in and gives you more room for your games. The PS5 has an internal storage slot you can fit an M.2 SSD card into. 2. Something like the WD Black SN850. You'll need a screwdriver, a few minutes, and Sony's instructions. Open on an Xbox Series X or S, it's even easier. The expansion slot is on the outside. Buy a compatible card like this Seagate one and follow Microsoft's instructions. Learn about the latest technology on the Kim Commando show. For Kim Commando's daily tips, free newsletters, and more, visit her website at commando.com. Next, living section, headline, whatever. When you're stuck in your finances, this is from the Everyday Cheapskate, Mary Hunt, who is a guest columnist. A question I receive nearly every day goes something like this. I am ready to start taking back control of my finances, but how do I get started? It's like I'm stuck. Don't think you're alone if you find yourself wanting to do all the steps at once, but that would be a big mistake. In the same way, when building a house, you wouldn't pour the foundation, raise the walls, and put on the roof all at the same time. Definitely wouldn't sit on the roof. With your money makeover, you need to take things one step at a time. First, you need to lay the foundation. I call this initial step tracking. You cannot manage what you cannot measure. Tracking means to write down exactly where every penny goes. If you bring home $793.42 this week, next week you should be able to account for every single cent. Where did that money go? I suggest you track it on a daily basis. Every morning, start with a fresh piece of paper. Throughout the day, as you spend any amount of money, write it down. How much did you spend and what did you spend it on? Do this for at least 30 days. Longer may be necessary if you are really in a real financial fog. Ideally, both you and your partner should keep records. At the end of the month, pull out all those daily records, categorize your spending. Then you'll begin to see patterns. Perhaps you spent $3.49 a day on lattes. Of course, there are no right or wrong answers here, but you might want to point out to yourself, and maybe your partner, that if you keep this up for a year, you will shell out $1,273 on coffee drinks. Apply this multiplication to all your spending categories. Where are things really out of line? Can you see why you are spending more than you earn? How much of your spending was done with cash? Debit cards? Checkbook? Credit cards? What might you have done differently to come up with a more favorable end? It's going to take an assessment of a professional financial planner to point out, problems in your spending. You can see that instinctively. Putting things in black and white as a way of clearing the fog. We'll move on to living with Harry. So after a quick break, you'll hear some living.
And we're back. Thank you very much, Simon. It's actually a pleasure reading with you today. Really enjoy this. Thank you so much. So I'm going to read Today in History. Just a few minutes left here. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd, the 114th day of 2024. There are 252 days left in the year. On this date in 1616, renowned playwright William Shakespeare died at Stratford-upon-Avon, England, at age 52. On this date in 1635, the first public school opened in the U.S., Boston Latin School in Boston, Massachusetts. In 1861, General Robert E. Lee was appointed the commander of Virginia's Confederate forces during the Civil War. In 1928, actress, singer, dancer, and diplomat Shirley Temple was born in Santa Monica, California. In 1954, Hank Aaron hit the first of his 755 career home runs. In 1969, Sirhan Sirhan was sentenced to death for the June 5, 1968 assassination of U.S. Senator Robert Kennedy Sr. And finally, on this date, in 2005, YouTube co-founder Jawed Karim uploaded his first YouTube video, Me at the Zoo. The live reading of the Telegram and Gazette has been a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Programming is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Mass Commission for the Blind, and Unibank. If you have any suggestions for our program, please call us and let us know. We would love to hear from you. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or Android. I'm Harry, reading with Simon, and stay tuned for the show Accent on Ability. Have a great day.
This is Bird Note. This eerie sound can be heard in the lowland jungle throughout much of Central and South America. It's the voice of a great tinamou. Secretive and almost impossible to see, great tinamous call early and late in the day, and their voices carry a long distance. Forty-seven species of tinamous live in the American tropics. They are chunky birds with strong legs and smallish heads. Their bodies resemble those of a quail or a partridge, but they're not related. Instead, tinamous' closest known relatives are huge, extinct, flightless birds of New Zealand. Their short wings can get them off the ground for brief flights, but mostly, tinamous spend all their time on the ground, where they walk briskly and can even sprint for a short distance. Tinamous eat plants, insects, worms, snails, and small vertebrates like frogs. Males build and defend nests and tend the young, while females roam about and mate with several males. Their eggs are like highly polished jewels, ranging in color from brilliant red to yellow-green, purple, blue-green, and black. But it's that voice that sets it apart. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2000. 2363. 877-382-2363.